over 50 years ago. So it's what I call the stimulus of prohibition.
Alfred McCoy, we're going to have to leave it there, but I'm going to encourage people to read your article and your new book. History professor, University of Wisconsin-Madison's first book, Politics of Heroin, CIA Complicity in the Global Drug Trade. His new book is Cold War on Five Continents. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
The viewpoints expressed in this program are the opinions of the people expressing them and are not necessarily those of Fresh Air Incorporated, its staff, or its board of directors.
Hi, this is Al McFarlane, host of The Conversation with Al McFarlane. You're listening to 90.3 FM, KFAI, Minneapolis. I'm Al McFarlane. Welcome to The Conversation with Al McFarlane. I'm glad to be here and glad to have you along as well. I've got a great show for you today, a great conversation talking about Cuba and Venezuela. I'm pleased to have several members of activist organizations talking about what our country is going through right now, what the world is really going through based on the what I think are illegal, inappropriate actions of our president, Donald Trump, in the invasion of Venezuela and the threats he is making to other countries in the Caribbean and, in fact, throughout the hemisphere. Please welcome Allison Gunderson and Akile Anai. Allison is here in Minnesota, and Akile joins us from St. Petersburg, Florida, I think. Guys, thank you both for being here. Allison, let me start with you. You are representing the Minnesota Anti-War Committee. To set the conversation, let's take people back 2 weeks. Why are we having this conversation? What happened? Give the story, the narrative.
Yeah, so on January 3rd, really in the night, between like 1 a.m. and 2 a.m., the United States did a true escalation of war and attacked and bombed Caracas, Venezuela. And they also kidnapped their democratically elected president, Nicolas Maduro, and First Lady Celia Flores. And we are now sitting in the aftermath. Also within Minneapolis, this ICE occupation raid happening. Constantly with 2,000 troops being sent on Tuesday, and by Wednesday morning, they had murdered Renee Good in South Minneapolis. So we really are just sitting here seeing U.S. imperial violence abroad coming home to roost right here in our hometown.
Talk about the work of the Minnesota Anti-War Committee. What is it? Who's involved in it? And what have been the priorities? What are the activities of the organization?
Yeah, the Minnesota Anti-War Committee, we're an anti-imperialist, anti-U.S. intervention, grassroots activists, organizers, all within the committee of, all within the community of Minnesota, Minneapolis, St. Paul. We have members from all over. It was founded in 1998, and it really focuses broadly on U.S. intervention everywhere, but we've done primarily work around Palestine, and now we are, you know, reacting to the U.S. intervening into Venezuela. And we are for Palestinian self-determination, Venezuelan self-determination. We don't want the U.S. intervening in these countries. They need to determine what's right for them.
Mm-hmm. And you started off by linking or acknowledging the connection between the protest here in Minneapolis that come out of the ICE killing of Renee Good last week. And stretch out on that, if you would. How do you see these items being connected?
Yeah, well, I mean, we see both of these issues having the same root cause in U.S. imperialism. For a very long time, the U.S.'s foreign policy has been, you know, going and occupying other countries, intervening into who's their leaders, exploiting their resources, heavily sanctioning these countries. And we are now seeing that turned on us. You know, Minnesota just had our SNAP funding cut for foods. A little bit before that, we just had our funding for childcare cut. I think there's many links in between the way the U.S. is treating now U.S. citizens internally with National Guard occupations in our cities. They're both, U.S. imperialism is the cause for both of these sufferings.
Let me bring Akule and I in. Akule, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation with Al McFarland. Thank you for being here. Start off by talking about, if you would, your organization, African People's Socialist Party.
Absolutely, and thank you so much for having me. And yes, I am a member of the African People's Socialist Party. This organization is led and founded by Chairman Amalia Chatelle, and it was founded to complete the Black Revolution that was defeated from the 1960s following the U.S. counterinsurgency. Most famously, people know the program COINTELPRO. And you know, that was a crucial aspect, part of you know, what contributed to the defeat of, you know, our struggle during that time. And so in 1972, three Florida-based organizations came together to form the African People's Socialist Party. And you know, today we have over 50 economic institutions that develop dual and contending power, you know, putting power in the hands of, you know, the Black working class. And it's an organization that spans across the globe, in Europe, in the Caribbean, in Africa, and obviously throughout the U.S.
And focusing on this latest imperial action by the U.S. government in Venezuela, what is the position and what is the strategy? What is the discussion coming from the African People's Socialist Party?
Yeah, well, I think it's important to first note that the party's position has been consistent, you know, prior to this recent assault on Venezuela, because we know that it's not the first time that the U.S. has, you know, pursued, you know, this kind of aggression and attempted to isolate forces like Venezuela, Cuba, and other strong holdouts in Latin America. And so our party, we're guided by a philosophy, a theory titled African internationalism. We are internationalists, and we unite with the struggle of colonized and oppressed peoples around the world. And like Allison, you know, mentioned, that we support the ability of, you know, peoples around the world to determine their own fate, their own futures, and, you know, and run their own, you know, governments and things like that. But the problem, you know, that we have is that we live under a global colonial mode of production, a social system that was born, you know, through the assault on the majority of the peoples on the planet Earth. And at the helm, the, you know, the current world hegemon, the U.S. Is, you know, historically has intervened, you know, in all of these places, especially that maintain an anti, you know, imperialist position, that do not acquiesce to the whims of the U.S., bow down, allow them to, you know, easily establish puppet government regimes and things like that. So, so as African internationalists, like I said, we support, you know, the right and the will of Venezuelans and, you know, and oppressed and colonized people everywhere to resist, to defend themselves, and to, you know, control their own, you know, resources.
How difficult is it, Anai and Allison, to bring language into common use in the community that challenges the predominant narrative? I am just hearing and feeling both of you describing the process of imperialism. And we don't hear that every day, all the time. And maybe we should. We don't hear enough defining of the relationship as colonialism or neo-colonialism, offspring of tenets of or extensions of imperialism. And so that conversation is not common in the broad community, but it needs to be, I believe. And so when you approach people to say, here's another way of looking at these dynamics, what are you discovering in terms of people getting it, not getting it, or resisting the idea that you bring as an idea for healing and change, revolutionary change in society? Allison, what do you think?
I mean, I think when you do break it down, like, people get it. They, you know, breaking down imperialism to like, hey, I think I just heard that we're giving ICE $29 billion of our tax dollars. Mm-hmm. Like, that's us paying for ICE. That's us, like, giving these crazy inflated military budgets our hard-earned money. Don't we want healthcare? Like, don't we want that put back into our needs? Housing, healthcare, food. Don't we want other people to not be hurt by U.S. bombs? Don't we want, like, all of the, I think breaking it down to that, like, people get it. Mm-hmm. They don't want their friends and loved ones to serve in these wars either, you know?
Mm-hmm. Akile, what are your thoughts? In your community group, in your age group, what's happening? How are these ideas taking root or not? I see you as the resistance, but I know there's a resistance to you as well. So talk about that if you would.
Yeah, I think, and I know that, you know, that resistance gets portrayed. I think it's overinflated and it's, you know, not accurate in terms of what masses of people are moving towards. And, you know, just, you know, coming from the African working class, the Black working class community, I mean, we have a different relationship with this social system, and we have a profound history, certainly inside the U.S., you know, with this social system. And so we might not say necessarily imperialism, although, you know, you walk into some barbershops and on the corner, you might be surprised. The brothers mm-hmm. and sisters can say these things to you, but it's not hard to win, because when we talk about, okay, this is what ICE is and what they're doing in Venezuela, you know, we consider the police a domestic military occupying force in our communities, and Black communities have, you know, been occupied, you know, since Black people have been, you know, brought here forcibly against our will. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, and these police who were first slave catchers, mm-hmm. you know, carrying out the law where it was illegal for us to be running from the plantation. So, you know, we have a history, again, a certain relationship to this system where we can describe these things, explain these things, and they make sense because we're dealing with it on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, and that's certainly true too for the indigenous Mexican population, you know, inside the U.S. And throughout the Americas. I mean, this is a settler colony. This is, we live in a situation where all of this is happening against our will. And so, you know, when we go out and we, you know, sell our newspaper, the Burning Spear newspaper, and we put imperialism in there and we define what these things are, we say what colonialism is, define it, capitalism, this is what it is, this is where it began. And, you know, and like I said, you would be surprised, but you might not be, because again, this is the situation that we've been living with for hundreds of years.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. I'm talking about the recent American invasion of Venezuela and what it means for our people here at home, for the hemisphere, for the notion of a self-determination and freedom for all people. What it means in terms of the historical settler, colonizer, imperial framework out of which current political decisions are being made and which are being challenged by indigenous people all over the planet. And my guests here are Akile and I, and Allison Gunderson. Akile is with the African People's Socialist Party and Allison Gunderson with the Minnesota Anti-War Committee. Thank you both for being here. If you're listening and want to join the conversation, if you're on one of the social media platforms, either LinkedIn or Facebook or YouTube, drop a comment in the the comments section, and we'll relay that. Let us know where you're listening from. We're glad to hear from you. If you want to join the conversation, put that in the comment. We'll send you a link and bring you and your voice and your concerns into this conversation as well. And so, Allison and Akile, what are we to do from your point of view? What are you doing, both as an individual, but as part of creating an institution, an institutional response to injustice? That's what I see the Minnesota Anti-War Committee as. If I'm incorrect, straighten me out. But what do you see the mission is right now, and how does it play out today?
Well, I think first off, like to start organizing, joining, whether it's the Minnesota Anti-War Committee or another organization around, and to really get started on the work, to get out there, take actions, join protests, just be as visible as possible, and reiterating these demands that we want President Maduro free. We don't want a war with Venezuela. Combat this propaganda that they're talking about with Venezuela. You know, I got to visit Caracas earlier in December, and I got to see firsthand like a lot of like what US media is putting on to Nicolas Maduro and what they're putting on to Venezuela.
Did you actually meet Maduro? Did you meet him personally?
I did get to see President Maduro speak.
Okay.
And truly everything I witnessed was the exact opposite of what the US media is portraying him to
be. So unpack that. What do you mean? Tell me about that. Just go.
Yeah. I got to see him speak, and he really, really stressed having unity with the people of the U.S., unity with Cuba, unity with Palestine, unity with all people's struggles against U.S. imperialism, and building that up. He spoke about that year alone, Venezuela had put $90 billion into their commune system, which is you know, something that they're working towards and trying to build socialism and building more people power from the ground up. Just one of the many examples of like a man who is truly among the people that the US media is calling a dictator. It just doesn't add up. Those, what I'm hearing versus what I saw, and with all the people I spoke with who loved President Maduro, they really supported their government. They just aren't adding up.
So do you have the sense that the Venezuelans who are here, and there are many in this country, and they're generally being presented as anti-Maduro, and they're generally telling stories that their lives have been upended, their freedom abridged, their opportunity eclipsed by a system that they want to describe as a dictatorship. How does that voice sound to you, having visited Venezuela and maybe heard the voice of the people in the place of the people in Venezuela? Are we being manipulated by our government and by national, international moneyed media to be prepared to support this incursion and the further exploitation, domination of a people, the extraction of its resources, the theft of the labor and the wealth of a country that should be sovereign? Are we being conditioned in that direction?
Absolutely. Like even down the glaring example is all of these claims of narco drug trafficking and this buildup of bombing these fishing boats. They are fishing boats in Venezuela, when there's absolutely zero like evidence to back up this claim. The only one claiming it is the US. Like even a UN 2025 drug report like basically said Venezuela has virtually 0% drug production. Mm-hmm. And that the number one drug producers were Colombia and I think Peru. And I think that's just evident there that it's like very clear, the U.S. is not intervening to help the people of Venezuela. It is all about oil. The U.S. has never intervened in a country for anything other than the U.S.'s self-interest. So, yes, when the media is saying all of these blatant lies with nothing else to back it up, it's easy to see that they are trying to demonize this country that's really just doing great things like nationalizing its oil and not letting the U.S. exploit it. And that's why the U.S. is mad.
So, Akile, you know, this whole notion of demonizing, creating an other, right, to mobilize an attitude in the country is not new, and it's not new to us as African people. So when you look at the Venezuela incursion, how does it line up in your thinking and philosophy of the transition that I think we all believe is occurring, no matter what the government is doing right now? Something bigger and better is afoot among human beings. Let me throw that at you and see what your thoughts are.
Yeah, I mean, I think that as Allison mentioned, kind of some of the obvious, markers of, the real basis for why the U.S. is, invading Venezuela, what its purposes are. I mean, Donald Trump said it with his own chest, we're there for the oil and we're there to control the government. There was no secret about it. And it the whole thing about, narco-terrorism, it just likens to me to the whole war on drugs, especially in the period of the 1980s, which was another, excuse that the U.S. government used to justify farther aggression on the Black community inside the U.S. I mean, and you have a situation where, the U.S. in terms, you talk about, saving its population from drugs. I mean, it prescribes you drugs. It pumps the drugs inside of our communities. We would often say, the White House or the Rock House is the White House, and Uncle Sam is the pusher man, because this is where the drugs are coming from. It's not coming from some elaborate lab somewhere inside the Black community of, Los Angeles or something like that. It's being pumped into our communities and as a part of the process of removing Black people further out of political life. And then winning further, complicity, acceptance from, the majority colonizer population inside the U.S. that would be able to support then their own government in its attacks on Black people. So it's the same thing we're seeing, in Venezuela. And not to mention the economic sanctions, because they like to talk about, the dictatorship and look how the people are suffering as a consequence of, them punishing and penalizing.
The blockade in Cuba, right?
Exactly. Penalizing these, these countries, these forces who refuse to do their bidding, who refuse to accept what it is that the U.S. is attempting to do. And, and in terms of this whole narrative of, some Venezuelans who are anti-Maduro, anti-Venezuela, it's the same thing you saw coming out of Cuba. You got, anti-Castro and Cubans. And of course, a bourgeoisie who has benefited from the exploitation and the oppression of the workers in these various places would find some qualm with the workers seizing power and the means and being able to control the value of their own production. So, and we anticipate a very disgruntled colonial bourgeoisie once, African workers and indigenous workers, take power into our own hands. So, we've seen this, so many times in history, orchestrated coups and then boom, there is, some a president in this country that is, suddenly some very chummy, with, the U.S. government. So it's a repeated tactic. And I think today, though, people are able to really see through it, especially because we have the benefit of that history to have learned from.
One of our viewers is the Big Cheese, E3E, a couple of comments from him. Thank you for the comment. He says leadership in Cuba should be on notice that Trump will invade Cuba next. And he says by invading Venezuela and arresting their president, Trump is pulling the fear of God into the leadership of the entire Latin America. Do you agree with that? Is that a fair description of what is happening?
I mean, it's kind of subjective to say the fear of God and to speak for, you know, these leaders, you know, of these places. I mean, I think that even though Venezuela had this pressure and had these attacks coming from the U.S. for decades, the fact is that the resolve remains strong, that the people don't even consider this a defeat. You know, they consider it an escalation, but they did not consider it a defeat. And, you know, I think the same is true of Palestinians, even though there was this genocide slaughter of Palestinians that we saw on our screens on a regular basis. And, you know, and even for Black people inside this country, in Africa, you know, that has, obviously this whole, you know, colonial relationship, but, you know, obviously like the neocolonial forces, the regimes there are threatened by the fact that, you know, you have Ibrahim Traore and the whole Alliance of the Sahel states. I mean, what we're seeing too is a very weakened, desperate U.S. imperialism, a dying U.S. imperialism. And so what do we know about something that is cornered? When you're backed into a corner, you are fighting for your life and you're going to lash out in every way possible, you know, to stay alive. That's what we're seeing, you know, from the U.S. And so I think what's really important too is to recognize that Cuba is not isolated. Venezuela is not isolated. Africa, and African people, Palestine is not isolated. In fact, our unity is, you know, the thing that threatens the very existence of this social system. So it is, in fact, the fear of God, if you will, is within the colonial ruling class, you know, this bourgeoisie that has been able to control and dominate the peoples of the world. The people of the world are saying no more, throwing it off, you know, throwing this off our backs. So that's where the real fear lies.
When you were speaking earlier, Akule, you talked about the emergence of the African People's Socialist Party from what you described as a defeat of the movement. And that caught my attention because I never have put the experience that the movement went through. I've never seen it as a defeat. Say more about that. And I mentioned, I'm just sharing on the screen for those who are listening on the radio, pull up the current this week's issue of Insight News. And it's a story that we ran actually a year ago, but we're doing it again because we're looking at celebrating the life and work of Martin Luther King. And in an interview last year with Professor Mahmoud El-Qadi and a couple of other people, we printed the story and reprinted it in this week's edition. But I love the headline. Headline says, "The Civil Rights Movement didn't start with Martin Luther King Jr. It started when the first slave was dragged off a ship kicking and screaming." And I bring that up right now, Akule, because I think there's continuity. I don't see defeat in our history. I see consistent movement, movement that we cannot always fully appreciate because we have not had the systems and tools to communicate our advances broadly, not like we have today. And I, for one, am appreciative both of the technology and of your generation that has grabbed this technology and found a way to be in community with people all over the planet, regardless of the official posture and the processes that try to keep people tamped down. So, you can take that.
Yeah.
Take that one down. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, you know, to say that the Black Revolution was defeated, because we're talking about revolution and movement, which is different, because revolution implies a total transformation of a society. And that process was defeated militarily and ideologically. It had been defeated. Our leaders, you know, imprisoned, assassinated, organizations completely destabilized. And then what replaced that, you know, for instance, we had Black Power on our agenda. And then what replaced that is, some programs that would serve to you know, try to make the conditions of our people more livable, more breathable under the same social system. So it wasn't Black people achieving power in our own hands. It was, you know, Black people gaining some rights, you know, here and there. And so we through this process, we did achieve democratic space. And yes, and movement continued, resistance continued, because as long as we have been, you know, forcibly brought here against our will, African people have always resisted, will continue to resist. No one accepts this reality, you know, laying down. And so, you know, that process continues. And that's, you know, why the development of the African People's Socialist Party, because it was born from, you know, this process. And the reason why it's important to sum it up as a defeat is because we have to go to the drawing board and say, what happened? What was the reason why this process was interrupted, and how, you know, and how do we move forward? How do we establish the tactics and strategy for our liberation? And that's something that Chairman Amale Tshetela resolved to do. He wanted to solve the outstanding questions left unresolved with, you know, the defeat of the Black Revolution. And so, you know, we were able to understand, because the counterinsurgency, before we knew what it was happening to us. And and unlike today, where we have the papers, we have the proof. And even as in September of 2025, Trump released this national security memorandum that, you know, looked very similar. I mean, borrowing language and things like that from, you know, the counterintelligence program of the 1960s. But these things were happening to us, and we were not able to, you know, really sum it up. We knew something was happening, but we didn't know what it was. Like, we didn't have a name to it. And so again, we were, you know, being able to sum it up as what it was for us, we were able to say, here is how we, you know, come out of that and continue forwarding, rebuilding the Black Revolution. And so that's what the African People's Socialist Party has set out to do. And, you know, social movements are important, and resistance is important, but organized, you know, under a revolutionary party, under, you know, the Black working class, is critical, because the working class agenda has to be, you know, at the forefront. Otherwise, it can be sabotaged by the interests of, you know, the petty bourgeoisie. So, but yeah, that's where I think the distinction lies, is that the movement might have continued to exist, but the revolution was defeated.
At the moment. For the moment.
Yes, we are proof that it didn't kill, like Fred Hampton said, you can, you know, kill a revolutionary, but you can't kill the revolution. So we are proof that, yeah, you know, that they didn't stop anything, you know, right, at that period of the 1960s.
Let's bring another voice in, a person to help organize this program, as a matter of fact. Greg Clavy is here. And Greg is a member of the Minnesota Cuba Committee. I think, Greg, you have to turn your volume off or turn the other radio down. Yeah, turn your radio off. Greg, yeah, there we go.
Minnesota, Cuba.
We're getting the feedback. Greg, if you can hear me, turn your radio off, and we'll see, because otherwise we'll get feedback. Let's try it again.
Okay, does that help?
Yeah, perfect. Hi, Greg, how you doing, man?
Can everybody hear me?
Yes, we do. We hear you well, and we see you as well.
Because I can't hear you.
Oh, man.
Ah, I understand why.
Okay. If you got...
Yes.
Now you're here.
To be on the show, Al.
Thank you for joining us. Thank you. Let me have you jump right in. What's the Cuba impact of the Venezuela invasion on Cuba? What is the work, the message right now coming out of the Minnesota Cuba Committee that you are one of the principals in?
Yeah, of course, Venezuela and Cuba were allies. And so therefore, Cuba was relying, because of the sanctions that have cut off so many inputs from arriving in Cuba, Venezuela was an important resource for their oil. And as a result of the sanctions on Venezuela, limiting their access to the equipment they need for oil refinement. It has limited their amount of oil that they can send to Cuba. And then we have the blockade that is now interdicting all oil shipments from Venezuela to Cuba. So Cuba needs that oil to run its energy system as well as transportation, getting food to people, medicine to people, et cetera. And so this has put them in dire situation because, again, of their aging energy infrastructure. They need oil to run it. And so we hear about the blackouts and things like that. So right now, Cuba is in a very dire situation, probably one of the most dire situations they've been in. But regardless of that, because of their organization, and like Akile has been saying, the unity of the people has been able to defeat the decades-long sanctions and blockade by the strongest government, the most powerful government in the world. Because of that unity, they've been able to keep things running, to keep hospitals open, to keep the schools open, to keep their people fed. And because of that blockade, U.S. businesses could be doing a lot of work with Cuba, mm-hmm. and trading with Cuba. So this whole blockade is also an infringement on the not of the American people to travel there and see for themselves, but of American businesses to trade with Cuba. Cuba has a very educated, highly educated population with a high degree of culture and products that are much endowed and admired around the world. And so, it's what this blockade is doing, what this situation with Venezuela is only isolating the American people from the Cuban people and the Venezuelan people. And that's one of the things that's most dangerous, is that it keeps people from knowing about each other, from creating relationships that make not only democracy, but education and diplomacy stronger.
Let me stop you for a second. I had a special guest that was going to drop in, talk about MLK activities coming up here, and then we're going to come back to this conversation, if you don't mind, because I think this is all connected. T. Michael Rambo is here.
Hello.
Hey, man, how you doing? I know you're teaching school, and you're in between classes at the moment, so thank you for taking your time. You've got an event coming up this weekend celebrating the movement and the life and work of Dr. King. Tell us about it.
I'd be happy to. Al, I hope that you and your viewers can hear me or see me.
We do. See and hear you. Yes.
Oh, I love that. Well, I am delighted to be here from a local elementary school, and that brings me joy. And thank you for your guests talking about democracy. The event that we're having at the Dakota this Sunday the 18th at 7 p.m. is called A Message in Our Music, a tribute, a celebration of the life, the legacy, and the lasting efforts that Dr. King placed upon this country that has helped us transform, and yet also gives us pause and reason to reflect back on what successes we've had and how we can apply what was helpful and useful, and maybe look at ways to insert those same tools today. Who would have thought that we'd be in a space where those lessons learned and the things that he gave us and the things that our forebears brought through that incredible struggle of the civil rights movement would be now more than ever so vital and so important and so pivotal to the change of the country that we want to see. Sunday the 18th will be a celebration of Dr. King with vocalists like Thomasina Petrus, Tanya Hughes Kendrick, Patty Lacey Aiken, and Kashimana, and also India. All of us will be singing songs, also joined by Cameron Wright. We have an amazing group of wonderful vocalists and performers, And I hope that people can join us and be a part of this celebration of Dr. King's legacy at the Dakota this Sunday, the 18th at 7 p.m. You can go to dakotacooks.com for more information, or you can contact the Dakota box office for more information as well. I just thank you, Al, for taking the time out for not only me and so many others in the community to share our gifts, our talents, and our treasures with your listeners.
Thank you, T. Michael. And you've got to take off your class. So our regards to the students. Students are our future, and your work is critical. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. And that's a nice break. You know, it's great to have that because it shows the connection of all that we are doing. Nurturing and training and developing elementary school students, as T. Michael Rambo is doing, and talking about the protest of the murder of Renee Good, talking about what's happening, as you did, Akile, in Burkina Faso, the hope that comes out of the Sahelian region of Africa and the threat that poses. But the key is that, and talking about Cuba and Venezuela, all of these things are connected. And I'd like to spend the rest of the time that we have sort of getting into the connection. Greg, you know, I always thought and marveled at how difficult life, I haven't been to Cuba, but how difficult life has been in Cuba for Cuban people, particularly as you mentioned, where there's so much education, so much training, so much skill. But life has been, you know, difficult, extremely difficult, because of U.S. policy. And that policy finds expression in different levels, both domestically and globally. So, Greg, talk about that more. And Akile, if you would draw the line, continue as you were before, the end game ought to be, how do we motivate each other to work for serious change, and with the belief that the change we seek is both imminent and inevitable. Greg, go ahead.
Okay, I'll try to be brief, but first of all, I want to say that when we celebrate Martin Luther King, it should be more than just Martin Luther King light. It should be Martin Luther King at the end of stage of his life when he spoke up, out about the connection between imperialism in Vietnam and the battle at home for civil rights and democracy, that there was a direct connection. And we see that today when we see the attack on Minnesota by the Trump administration. It's the same as the attack on Venezuela and Cuba, in that what we're seeing is administration in the form of sanctions that is beginning to cut off childcare funds to Minnesota families, that's beginning to cut off food stamp funding for Minnesota families. That's the same as the sanctions on Cuba and Venezuela, where they tried to starve and deprive the people so that they would create an unrest to overthrow their government. And pretty soon, the Trump administration is going to start calling the governor of Minnesota a dictator and an authoritarian. Because the Attorney General Keith Ellison is suing the federal government because the people of Minnesota, of Minneapolis, have risen up to combat that those thugs that are in our city creating chaos. And it's just the same kind of thugs that our U.S. government hires to make these petty little theatrical demonstrations in Venezuela and Cuba that then the U.S. media, they feed it to the U.S. media, and they use that to say, see, these countries are run by authoritarian and dictators. In the U.S. media sphere, the word authoritarian and dictators means that those countries no longer bow to the wishes of the United States to steal their resources for the enrichment of rich people and corporations here in this country, that those resources are being used for the people of that country, for their education, for their health care, et cetera, et cetera. So I want to make it clear to people that the U.S. media is controlled, and I'm not talking about the black media, I'm talking about the corporate media, is mm-hmm. controlled by the rich. They edit the type of news that we hear so that it corresponds to the policy, the imperial, the colonial policy that the U.S. government follows. I'll stop there because I know Akile and Allison have more to say about that, and especially Allison, what she saw in Venezuela, because right now they're saying, oh, Venezuelans are happy about the abduction and kidnapping of the president, that they want a change of government. No, that can be further from the truth.
Allison, what are you hearing, Allison, about what's happening on the street in Venezuela? What is the mood, as far as you can tell, from your context there?
Yeah, people are definitely not celebrating their president being kidnapped. They are out in the street getting ready and uniting to fight against U.S. imperialism and U.S. intervention into their country.
How is Trump speaking so boldly and confidently about his intention to run Venezuela? He's saying that he's going to run the country, that Marco and Stephen Miller are going to be in charge, and generals and oil executives, with actually running the government, so that we can get, quote unquote, our oil that they stole from us out of the ground and back in production, and that so we can make a lot of money. How does that play with the people on the ground in Venezuela, as far as you can tell?
It doesn't play with them at all. They won't accept that. Right now, they have their interim vice president, Delcy Rodriguez, stepping in for President Nicolas Maduro. And they are demanding President Maduro be back. I also think it's important to say that, like, when I was there, there was a sentiment that was like, you know, after Chavez is the people, after Maduro is the people. Like, leaders are very important, but the people are the revolution. And the U.S. thinks that it can just waltz into Venezuela and kidnap their president, and then they can just run things, and that's just magic like that. But they're absolutely wrong. The people are in Venezuela defending the Bolivarian Revolution right now, and they are not going to go down without a fight. And it's just not true. Trump really likes to flap his mouth about a lot of stuff, but they're not in control of anything. The people of Venezuela are, Delcy Rodriguez is, and, you know, they still are declaring that President Maduro is still their president.
Akile, is the big lie crumbling? Is the bubble bursting? Is something else emerging that gives us hope and confidence that change is afoot in a way that it hasn't been before? What do you think?
Yeah, absolutely. We actually have a program on one of our community radio stations called White Lies Shattered. And this is one of them. I wanted to, in addressing this question, I wanted to also address kind of this overall relationship to, you know, what's happening in the U.S. to what the U.S. is doing, you know, to places like Venezuela, Cuba. And there's a couple things that I feel like we can touch on. One is, you know, this question of the whole global colonial mode of production. I mentioned that at earlier in the program because, you know, colonialism is more than just a policy. It's the mode of production. It's the way, you know, things, you know, are produced in society based off of, you know, this relationship that was imposed on the majority of the world by Europe. hundreds of years ago. And so there's a reason why our, you know, Black people in the U.S. And indigenous people in Venezuela and in Cuba and, you know, in Africa and in Palestine, why we all have the same enemy. That's not a coincidence. There's a reason why at the center of this is the historic colonial powers that have always been at play. And that's because we have been forcibly locked into a process that spans the entire globe. And so, you know, the ability. And
I've heard that process referred to as a criminal enterprise.
Yes. Well, I mean, you know, certainly, I mean, the greatest crime, you know, committed against, you know, human beings. And obviously that it has impacted so many different aspects of not just human life, but just, you know, the planet, all of these contradictions that have emerged as a consequence of this very violent, unnatural social system that we live in that is inherently exploitative, parasitic, and it's a system that absolutely has to go. But one of the things that I also wanted to point out is that, you know, we see the U.S. right now ruling without regard for its own law. Like it's its own law. And it's because we understand law to be the opinion of the ruling class. And so they get to determine the law at any given point in time as to the law serves its interests. And so we see this happening. I mean, with the invasion of Venezuela, we're hearing from all of these experts, this is illegal. This is illegal. This is illegal. And, you know, inside this country, what ICE is doing, this is illegal. They can't do this. They can't do this. And this is what we're seeing, a social system who has abandoned the pretext of democracy, has just thrown it all out of the window, you know, for the purposes of maintaining the social system. I bring back, that is a state of desperation. And that's why we can confidently say this, we are witnessing a moment in history that is dangerous. It's not to be taken lightly because it's not, you know, it's not just Trump that we're dealing with. It's a whole social system,
yes,
you know, that is governed by these colonial powers and U.S. at the helm. So it's very dangerous, but we are seeing a very transformative process take place, not just before our eyes, but a process that we are participating in.
Would you each get 30 seconds here, give website or a way to contact you? Allison, you first. How can people connect with the Minnesota Anti-War Committee?
Sure. I think the best way is on Instagram at MN Anti-War Committee.
Just Akile, like that. Akile, African People Socialist Party?
Yes. Well, quickly, APSPUhuru.org is our website to learn more and to join. We also have an international plenary coming up in April from 17th to the 19th in St. Louis, Missouri. You can register at APSPplenary.org. And you can also witness how the party is transforming in real time, going beyond protest to actively changing the world.
Maybe you'll come back between now and then several times to help promote that event in St. Louis. I'd love to have you back. Greg, how can people support the Minnesota Cuba Committee?
Our 17th annual Minnesota Film Festival starts on the 4th of March, and for 5 weeks, we'll be showing Cuban films at the main cinema. You can also go to our National Network on Cuba website, nnoc.org, as well as Minnesota Cuba Committee, mncubacommittee.org, for information and connections.
Greg Clave, thank you so much. Allison Gunderson, Akile, and I thank you also very much. And we'll stay connected and keep this story alive in our community. Thank you so much. I'm Al McFarland. This is The Conversation with Al McFarland. I'm going to close the show out with a presentation our mayor, Jacob Fry, made at the Black Men's Legacy Conference back in, I think, October. This is, we've been running a series of stories about wealth building in the Black community, and this is one of the presentations that came up. We might not get to the very end of it before our time is up, but check it out. Good information, good spirit, and thank you for supporting us here at KFAI for The Conversation with Al McFarland and on our social media platforms. Check this out. Go ahead, play the tape.
James Brown impersonation. I'm going to tell you to Google this. Look, I am not here for my health. I am here because I'm in charge of this city. And I realize that this city does not succeed unless you are all a tremendous success yourselves. I realize when I'm looking around the room, I know these are not just like the entrepreneurs and the CEOs and the creative class of tomorrow, but like the entrepreneurs and the creative class and the CEOs of right now.
That's right.
I wanted to come here and talk about equity, but not equity in the social justice sense. I wanted to talk about equity in terms of money. Because we're on the north side right now, and we've got a very long history of doing things the wrong way, and doing things the wrong way has had a massive impact on the equity for people in this room and well beyond. Senator Bobby Joe Champion can tell you we have maps at this city dating back 100 years, quite literally designating the north side as a slum for blacks and Jews. When you combine that prescriptive work with intentional segregation and restrictive covenants that run with the land, intentionally separating communities from some of their most vital assets, like, say, a riverfront by a massive highway followed by a whole lot of heavy industrial, when you do all those things, it has an impact. And then once we couldn't do those same things anymore explicitly, they still happen, but they happen implicitly through a city zoning code. Civil Rights Act passed. You can't do those things and actually say you're doing those things. You still do them. But you do it through a zoning code. Again, separating communities out. And then you combine that with a GI Bill that, yeah, delivered funds for people after they went to war for our country. But largely the people that got those funds and had that picket fence and had that single family home and were able to put down a down payment on that home were all not black. They were white. And so when you combine all of those things together, you gotta make sure that we push back on some of those intentional decisions from the past. We gotta make sure that the precision of our solutions now match the precision of the harm that was initially inflicted, which was precise. And so when I talk about equity, of course I'm talking about the social justice sense, but what I'm talking about is money. Being able to own your own home, own your own business, build equity because of the great work that you have done, and then you can pass that equity on to your families. You know what doesn't work? What is not fair? Is I see people in this room right now, people that I know, people that I respect, people that I know who have invested their blood, sweat, tears, time, and money in starting these great businesses. Then what happens? They make the business great. Additional customer and foot traffic comes along into those corridors. Then what happens? The value of that property goes up, the rents go through the roof, and they get displaced from some of those same corridors right. that they made wonderful to begin with.
That's
not fair. It's also just bad for our city. Because I want those very people to be able to benefit from their great work. So we set something up called the Ownership and Opportunity Fund, which provides gap financing to make sure that that business owner, usually black business owner, doesn't just own that underlying business, but owns the property, the land, owns the land. So that, and you can tell where I'm going here, when that great work reaps benefit, when those values do go up, they get equity. Equity in the social justice sense, but also equity in the sense that they reap the benefit of their work, they have determinative power over how their business succeeds, and then they pass that benefit on.
Well, there we go. What a great presentation. It was a good event. Mayor Fry say some things about economic development, wealth creation in our community. This has been a good program connecting what's happening here in Minneapolis with the ICE activity, with what happened in Venezuela, Cuba, Burkina Faso. We're connected. Join me again next week for more conversation. I'm Al McFarland. Have a great, great week.
You're listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI 90.3 FM, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and around the world at KFAI.org, non-commercial, community-powered radio. Here's a little bit of Soulcraft.